Hey guys, welcome to Game Chat this week on April the 16th of 2019, where we are talking about the first part of Siberia, which was a game released. It's listed as 2002. I've seen on other sites where it said 2003, so I'm not really sure which is exactly correct.
I think it was 2002 because like all the years in the game was 2002.
Okay, perfect. So January 2002 was when it was released. It's a point and click adventure game. Just to give you a little basis for it, this was from Steam. Kate Walker, a young, ambitious lawyer from New York, is handed what seems a fairly straightforward assignment, a quick stopover to handle the sale of an old automaton factory hidden in the Alpine Valleys. Then she can go straight back home to the U.S. However, little did she imagine, well, that's a lot of information, Kevin. Little did she imagine when embarking on this task that her life would be turned upside down. Dun, dun, dun. All right, so we will start with, I have no question this week. I don't know. So we'll just do some introductions. I can't think of anything.
What was your favorite childhood toy?
There you go. Thank you, Stanton. What was your question, Kevin?
I was going to say, if you could have an automaton do something, what would you have it do? But that,
you know,
that could be used for
next week.
Later week.
Next week.
Yeah, we can do that next week. We can do that next week. So favorite childhood toy, starting at the top.
This is Franco. Oh, God, that's a great question.
You got this, Frank.
You know, I had a crazy memory of, God, I don't even know who made it. It was a thing that I'm really dating myself.
A thing?
That had a record player and like a slide projector built in. It was about the size of a laptop.
Interesting.
And you would play like classic stories like Peter Pan, I forget whatever the ones, on it.
Oh,
and
very cool.
You played the record and it told you when to change the slide, it would change the picture. It was really neat.
Oh, interesting. And so it was just like generic stories?
Yeah, I'm tempted very much to say Disney, but I think it was just the classics. Like Hiawatha, and I remember playing Hiawatha, Peter Pan, and I can't remember a couple other ones. Now you got me thinking.
Oh, that's cool.
So it was basically a book on tape before tape.
Yes.
Because really cool. I've had a few. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Next?
That's me. This is Jonathan. I'm trying to think. I think my favorite toys growing up were the Fisher-Price adventure sets, which were very much a very, like, I'm pretty sure late 90s thing. And I still, have some of them in my closet. Because I refused to get rid of them.
Like, were they like the...
Like, with the little...
There was the pirate ship.
Yeah, I had the pirate ship.
There's an Old West and a Robin Hood. And I had all of them. And then I also had the accompanying CD-ROM game. Where you, like,
whoa,
the characters talked. And
oh, my.
And I still have... As much of it as I could keep. I don't have the pirate ship because my dad threw it away because it was up in the attic. The only ones that are safe are the ones that are still in my closet right now. I refuse to get rid of them. But now my mom's protecting them because she's like, they are now in the grandchild. Whenever there's grandchildren, she's like,
yes.
These are going to be the toys for when the grandchildren come and visit. But we're now in that limbo space where there is no grandchildren.
I used to have a chest like that, and I think it's gone now.
I think we're saving my... we have my sister's, like, dollhouse. Some sort of Fisher-Price doll figurines.
That's lovely. All right, next?
That'd be me. This is Kevin, and... favorite childhood toy. don't know. Probably something to do with really like some sort of Hot Wheels car or something like that. I did have a few of those ones that had like color change abilities.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And like, and then like all the tracks. Stuff and then like some of the things where like you like pumped it and it went and shot the car out really fast.
Yeah, I was a big Micro Machines person. I mean, I loved the look of Micro Machines and I always wanted some, but of course that was a quote unquote boys toy, so like I was never bought them.
We had some of those. They were more of my brother's. I got some of like the Star Wars ones when they came out. Star Wars ones.
Nice.
And then, I know we also had some sort of city thing that was packed inside like a Micro Machine van.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very cool. All right, next.
This is Chris. It's kind of hard to like pick one.
Isn't it?
I mean, you know, there's always the classic like Legos, but then there's also, you know, I had the real Ghostbuster figures, which I got a lot of use out of. But, you know, and then there's also Alfie, which was kind of like a speak and spell, but more in a robot form.
Yeah.
But, you know, kind of along Franco's, you know, kind of toy. There's one thing, and I can't seem to really find any information on it, and I can't remember what it was called, but it was basic. It was like a viewfinder, but you had these little cassettes that had maybe like 30 seconds of video on it, but there was no audio. It was just strictly video.
Yes, and you had to turn the knob, right?
No, there was no knob. Something
different.
It was all like there was a motor in there, so you just pop the cassette in, hit play, and it would play the thing. It was like a mini VHS tape, but it was like a 16 millimeter or you know just tiny like microfilm in there. And I remember there was like Betty Boop and. I think there was Popeye and Mickey Mouse and like other things too, but for the life of me, I could not remember the name of the thing. And I think it was out in like the 80s. And I just remember it being like the coolest thing ever. And yeah, it's been long lost to history at this point.
Oh man. Well, welcome to the chat, guys. This is our chat. We're just going to talk about old toys. I keep thinking of things to say, but then it just like Frank posted a picture of his TV thing, which looks at first it looked like something was burning inside of it. But now that I see the picture of the foxes, I think it looks really cool. Anyways, my name is Steph. And as Chris was saying, it's hard to pick a favorite, but... One thing that kind of goes along with the game, I guess, automatons of sorts, was these. Like I have, and I still have them. Actually, they're in my closet. I can see them from where I'm standing. But it was I had a series of talking, kind of like Teddy Ruxpin's. Like I had a Teddy Ruxpin. I love my Teddy Ruxpin. But then, which I don't have anymore because he broke. Womp 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 womp. And I had one of the original ones, which was like bigger and like more heftier than like these little childish things they have out or they had out a few years ago. Anyways. And so I have a Mickey Mouse. I have a Mother Goose. I have it's called a Corky and a Cricket doll, which were like little like kids and they were like toddler sized. And you put cassettes in the back of them and they tell you stories and they came with books that went along with them. I absolutely love those things. And I still have them. So yeah. Anyways, no, Teddy Ruxpin is not Satan. He was amazing. I slept with my Teddy Ruxpin, which is why he broke because he fell out of my bed and his jaw came off.
Hence why he's Satan.
It's not Satan. His jaw came off in our sleep, but that's okay.
He fell out of my bed one too many times, probably. Anyway,
Satan.
I was also a very hefty child, so I could have rolled over him in the middle of the night. I don't know. Anyways, again, welcome to the chat. We're talking about the first part of Siberia. Again, the designer on that, which I'm going to butcher this name, is Benoy Sokal, who seems to be a one-man show on this game, which is kind of interesting and kind of impressive. Or at least no one else was listed. So if he had anyone else working for him, it was a secret. So how did you enjoy the mechanics of this game? Like, what did you think? What did you like? What did you not like? Was there anything you liked?
Right off the bat, it reminded me of what, Longest Journey, I think? Where the, you know, it's just like you have these intermediate screens that are just there for show. I don't know what, I don't know if we'll ever get back to the town after we take the train, but that bakery will never open.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like it's doomed to be closed for the rest of, for all time.
As far as we know, yes.
Yeah. So gameplay wise, it reminded me of that a lot. The same with the sometimes obscure puzzles, and where exactly what you should be doing or shouldn't be doing, or so interesting. Yeah. You know what? If you're not playing with a walkthrough, I imagine this game is torturous.
This game seems like Longest Journey. It had some pretty. I discovered a term yesterday from somebody playing
a game.
Forget what it was. They were playing some other puzzle game.
Okay.
And the term was called Moon Logic, where like it's just logic that doesn't really make any sense, or like.
Mm-hmm.
And this, like, Longest Journey had some of that, but you at least knew kind of where you were supposed to go.
Yeah.
And in this, it's kind of like, hey, just go and wander around until somebody randomly calls you on their cell phone and yells at you about nothing at all related to what you're doing.
Yeah.
There's not really any directional prompts. You're just kind of like, hey, go wander around and break into people's houses.
There wasn't any directional prompts. It seemed like in this first part that I felt like that if I would have explored every crevice of every room, I probably would have found everything, like, as I explored and, like, found the stuff that I needed. And or at least knew where things were located so that when I had to find it for something, I knew where to go for it. And that happened a few times, but then there were some things like for instance, where you start out, which is at the inn, I found the two cogs on the table after the kid left, but I completely missed the two in the floor. So I got the way towards the end. And I'm at this point, I'm reading a walkthrough pretty regularly and I'm seeing, oh, put the two cogs in, you know, after I'd already put two in, it was like, put the other two cogs in and do this. And I was like, I only have two cogs. I don't have four. So I had to go back in the walkthrough to see where I missed the cogs. So like it probably would have been nice, I guess, to maybe have like a, which not a lot of point and click adventure games did this back then, was to have something to be like, hey, this item is important.
Wait, there's four cogs. I only have three.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's two on the table.
Yeah, there's two on the table and two on the floor.
I have to click on the floor twice.
Yes.
Why can't you pick up both cogs?
No, that's
reasons. Because reasons.
I would agree. The one thing that bothered me is that sometimes, like, I'm not sure if it's in this part as much as it is in the second part, but that sometimes you can't do things until you talk to someone. Like, you wouldn't be able to collect an item until you ask the person the right until you ask the person about the mission, this specific person about your mission. Anyways.
Yeah, the dam is frustrating that way.
Yeah.
When you're talking about the dam, so I'm following a walkthrough and, you know, it says to go and go up to the thing and, you know, then talk to Momo and then he'll open the dam for you.
Yeah.
But then you talk to Momo and he breaks the thing.
Yes.
And then it's like, oops, you open the dam.
Okay. Now what am I supposed to do here? So, and then like the walkthrough completely did not mention that you needed to go down to the boat, use the broken piece from the dam to get the ore, and then because it's too icky for
what I found funny is
she's completely fine with splashing around in the water if you go and click on it without using the broken thing, but she can't pick it up.
Yeah, it's too icky for her to pick up. So you have to go talk to Momo, have him go pick it up, and then he goes and opens the dam.
Because Momo's strong.
Yeah.
I think they might have changed some of the stuff in the game. Because I was using that same exact guide, and some of the graphics and stuff of that guide are completely different from what we're seeing. They look a little bit older.
Yeah, I ran into the guide that I probably was using the same one as well, that was wrong in a couple of different places. Yeah. Jonathan, you were saying something earlier?
Oh. Yeah, I guess it's kind of like it shows its like age, because I feel like early like games like this from like the early 2000s, like, or from like the is like 90s, is that like they made games where it's like they wanted you to play it as long as possible.
Yes.
And so they just like made up reasons for it to take forever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, going off what Kevin said about the moon logic, you know, it's like it could have been a whole lot easier. You know, it's like what kind of notary stamp do you have to go find an ink bottle in the attic of some decrepit mansion, you know, for you to use it? You know, it's like, and it's funny that there's this whole theme of like automatons, and it's like, aren't automatons supposed to make life easier? And yet each automaton has like 1,000 steps that it's like, but I mean, I was worried because I never finished Longest Journey, because I realized very quickly, like, this is not the game for me. Like, maybe when it first came out and I was younger and I had a bunch of time, and, you know, and like I wanted to explore the world and everything, but it's like now it's just I played, I think I'm the only one, but I played this on Switch because they released it on Switch.
Switch.
And and I will say, I mean, like the graphics, it's like still the same, but I will say everything, you know, ran pretty smoothly for the most part.
How do like, you I click was, on things? Do you have like a mouse?
No, it just when you go up to something, it just like a little, it will highlight. So that kind of made it easier too for like when you found things you could click on.
For sure.
On the PC, it's just like, keep moving the mouse till you happen to hit on something.
Yeah.
Oh gosh.
I hate that.
But from like before I even like turned on the game, I had like two different walkthroughs up. So like I was just like, I'm not even gonna deal with this.
Did they have a run option for you? Like if
you just hold like the left trigger. Yeah.
Okay.
So it like it's updated with like, you know, normal controls.
Well, this has like you can run with a double.
Yeah. So it like I don't know. Like it's like the concept of it, of the story, like what you read, you know, it intrigues me, but the execution does not.
Yeah.
Leave something lacking.
It's fair to say that, like, comparing it to games of that time, which I've listed those, like, in the early 2000s, some games that I found listed, and this probably isn't all of them, but it was like a ratings list. Real Mist was released in the early 2000s. Escape from Monkey Island was released in the early 2000s. And Darkfall, which I've seen streamed before, but is a little lesser known one. But yeah, I'm not sure. I wouldn't categorize Darkfall in the same category, though. So, but really, Escape from Monkey Island would definitely be kind of, I think, in the same category as this. So, and then also compared to, you know, like, say, The Longest Journey, which I think that was released earlier, honestly. And, like, it's funny because, like, I went through that ratings list and there were some games that were released, like, in the late 90s that I was like, oh, this is similar, but this was released in 2002. But then also, if you think if this was actually done by one person, that's kind of impressive.
Yeah, I would have swore that this was the same studio, you know, just based on how the graphics kind of look.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just thinking, like, you know, talking about mechanics of the game. You liked my favorite mechanic of the game, if you could call it a mechanic of the game, was when you find what's her name's diary, and just reading through the diary.
Yeah, that was...
Because I was like, it was well-written, it was intriguing, like, that was... And it's like, so it's... so that was a... That was my favorite mechanic, was reading the story before the game told me.
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't a bad, you know, sometimes, I mean, how many pages was that? You know, you would be like, oh, God, do I really have to read this? But you really wanted to read. I mean, it was telling an interesting story.
And just as a correction for the recording, I said it was only done by one person. I just looked it up and it was under the direction of Benoit, but it was a team of around 35 people, with a, well, where did I see that? It seemed like it was a very, $2 million budget.
Wait, $2 million?
That's what Wikipedia says. It says that on a budget of $2 million, using a special development environment, its budget was the highest of any Macroids game by that time.
I mean, I could believe that because it was
a commercial success. It did very well.
I mean, I remember when it first came out in 2002,
mm-hmm.
and playing it. And
what did you think then, Chris?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it back then. But I mean, again, I was heavily into these types of games.
At
that time.
Yeah.
So I was used to the whole fetch quest systems, mm-hmm. and roaming around trying to figure out where to go to get to these puzzles and everything, and everything. But I mean,
and like I tried to like compare, because like I grew up on these types of games. Like, I mean, for the most part, I mean, like, we had Nintendo, but we also had a computer system where we were big King's Quest people. My family was, so we had like all the King's Quest games, and Space Quest, and so like, which is very similar, except worse graphics, pixels everywhere. And like, I try to compare it to that version of myself that loved those games and played those for hours on end. I would have loved this game, you know, at that time. But with the advancements that we've made, you know, looking, it's a little unfair to look at it from here back to 2002 in a game like this.
You know, I'm not saying on the graphics and stuff like that. It's just more of the gameplay mechanics.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
it's, you know, you're really not given a direction as to where you really kind of need to go. It was just up to you to figure out the next step that you need to take.
Yeah.
And then the whole aspect of, oh, you need the ink. So you need to go all the way back to the other end of the map to get to that point. But in order to get to that point, you need to go all the way back to the other end of the map to get that one obscure piece that you forgot to then go to the other end of the other map to then do that puzzle first. And so it's just like, it's one of those things where it's just, you get tired after a while because it's like all you're doing is just walking back and forth to the same locations just to get one thing to complete the one puzzle you're trying.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Tons of screens that are beautiful, but completely useless. Like following Momo, you walk through like five different screens to get there.
Yeah.
But there is nothing to do on like three of those screens.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wish they just cut out the stair walking animation.
Because
that just slows everything down.
It's like what you would call April sitting in The Longest Journey, where it took her like 2 minutes to sit down.
Yeah, it's like, can we just like cut to the next scene at this point?
I guess in this first part, probably by the time that I finish the second part to have a stopping point, I've probably done about 40 minutes of stair scenes, which is insane. Like, I really wish I would have like timed them all and like accumulated like how much time I have spent on Kate walking up and down steps, but it's been a lot. And it's like, you know, there's really not, you know, and it's like, you know, I think one of you said something earlier about like, you know, they were trying to like, Jonathan was saying that, you know, they wanted you to spend as much time playing it as you could. And instead of filling it with content, you know, like things you can do, advancements in the story, characters that, you know, that you can talk to and do things for, it's all spent on going back and forth to get things, you know, going from one side of the map to the other, getting to a certain place and realizing, oh, I don't have what you need. I can't start the train without these two things. If I didn't have a walkthrough, I would have been like, what kind of special things do you need, dude? Like, I don't know.
I don't think if I didn't have a guide, I don't think I would even have ever gotten to what's her name's like attic office, attic thing, Anna's attic, because like the fact that like the key to like to even get in that area was in the coat rack of the notary guy. Office
umbrella stand
and then also I mean just the way the entrance to her estate was in that street scene
you could blink and miss it
in the wall until like I went to like it took me forever to realize that's entrance on the right
to the factory complex
but just like To get in the attic, first you had to get into the place, and that was like a little puzzle. And then once you got in, there's like four pathways. You don't know where they go. It's like I had to follow the guide. And then you get there and you see that weird ladder machine right there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, you need a key or something. Like, oh, you know where the key is? It's in the maze. It's like, oh,
thank God it wasn't a maze.
Oh,
that's what I was thinking, Frank. I was like, I got in. I was like, oh God, Here we go. This is going to be just fun.
Do I need to pull out a pencil and paper?
I would have enjoyed a hedge maze because then it would at least have a maze that makes sense instead of the maze that is town. Because it's like, oh, go out. It's like, oh, there's nothing left to do at the hotel. Now where do I go? Do I go all the way this direction? Do I go all the way that direction?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, if I didn't have a walkthrough and I saw that maze, assuming I would have figured out how to get there to begin with, I probably would have been like, nope. I'll join game chat next month.
You know, like,
It's kind of like somebody, like, I just took a quick note. Three characters that are like there for no reason. The gardener, it's like, okay, one line of dialogue and that's all you get. The baker, the guy at the bakery that never opened. And the guy on the bench, it's like,
oh yeah, the guy at the
bench. I ever sit down and talk to the guy at the bench. I wanted to sit down and talk to the guy at the bench.
I didn't even know there was a bakery.
Oh yeah.
Run past it.
The guy was standing outside and you talked to him and he was like, well, if you're looking to get something in the bakery, sorry.
It's closed.
If the guy didn't tell me to talk to somebody, I didn't go near him. Yeah. I was like, I'm getting through this.
The first major one was stupid telephone number on the fax. It's like, how am I supposed to know that I can actually call? How am I supposed to know I can call people on the phone?
Okay, I saw that in the walkthrough. The Switch version doesn't have that. You pull up the phone and it automatically calls.
Oh, you lucky bastard.
Yeah.
Well, you also have the memory, too. So if you go into the memory, there's stored numbers in there as well.
Oh, I didn't see. I didn't even know that.
So yeah, I tried calling everyone.
You click the memory button. You have the office. You have your boyfriend, your mother. And
is it your boyfriend or your husband?
It was your boyfriend.
All I know is he's just really annoying.
I mean,
so is your mother.
I don't guess he ever says. He never, I mean, as far as I know, it might not say. I think it's just listed as Dan in your phone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You also work together, too, because, you know, that like the screenshot I just posted, he's like, but Katie, you can't do this to me. I mean, it's the Goldberg contracts.
There's the Goldberg!
Yeah.
Red
flag. The Goldberg.
Total 90s corporate,
I just love though how, you know, her mother calls and she's like talking about how she met this famous person or whatever, and then Kate's like, oh well, you know, I'm stuck here doing some stuff and, you know, I can't really talk about it, and her mother's like, oh yeah, because I'm too stupid, and I'm like, no, it's because it's confidential information that hasn't been released to the public yet that I can't really talk to anyone but my law firm about, and has nothing to do about your intelligence. So get even off your high horse and shut your mouth.
even though you are pretty stupid, Mom.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mom, if I told you, you'd be having a sit-down with the Securities and Exchange Commission.
I'm not sure I've ever disliked so many NPCs in my life.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's all the NPCs that call you. Like, I didn't have too much of a problem with the people. Well, granted, I ran past them.
I mean, except with the exception of Momo. I like Momo. But even the innkeeper was like demeaning Momo and was like calling him a stupid, like a stupid brat or stupid kid. And then like, I mean, I guess the guy on the bench was okay. I guess the bakery guy was okay. Even the guy in the office, I forgot his name, that you have to go visit.
Yeah.
I got to take a nap so you can never talk to me for the rest of the
day. I'm just like, I don't know where all these like horrible people come from, and why is Kate
maybe because they're all lawyers and businessmen?
No, I mean, but these are people that aren't lawyers. I mean, these are like the innkeeper. Oh. These are her mom,
Oscar. I was thinking, since Oscar is like on the cover of the game, you know, the artwork, it's like, oh, he's gonna be my robot pal, and it's like very quickly you get annoyed with him. And then it's like he's trying to be C-3PO but funny, and it's like, no, you're not.
Well, even C-3PO is kind of annoying.
I know.
But he's it's funny because he is annoying, and R2-D2's smarter than him, and is just like, C-3PO, you're an idiot.
But also, I all that being said, like, I actually like Kate pretty well. Like, I like her character, and I like her,
yeah,
you know, like, the, her dialogue, except when she's, like, talking to people on the phone, like, and she's, like, apologizing to her boss and to her boyfriend, and it's like, stop, you're doing your job.
Yeah, and
I love you're doing your job.
Why so, does she work for that guy? Why does she have this man in her life?
I know. So, I love how she, like, as we're getting frustrated with Oscar, at least she also gets frustrated with Oscar.
She does.
She's like, like done with him.
Yeah. She's like, excuse me.
So,
did anybody select the wrong leg color? Or wrong leg type?
Oh, I did. I did. Yeah. I did the first time.
The stupid guide. Because they don't show a picture of the actual leg type you need. They show the default leg.
I totally lucked out. I guess. Guide.
But with the, I can't remember what exactly the gardener said when I talked to her, but it was like after I was done talking to her, I was like, I'm sorry I even bothered you. Because she was so, I don't know, it felt like she was so put off by you interrupting her. But then the other thing too, I love how when you go to the church and Kate's boss calls her and he's like, you don't understand how big of a deal this is. You know, you have to stay there until this is finished and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, what do you think I'm doing right now?
Yeah.
Like, obviously I'm not like, cause it's like, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So why are you yelling at me saying that I'm not coming home until this is done? Like, I'm in the process of figuring this out.
I have left jobs because of bosses talking to me even less accusatory than this.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I'm amazed. I totally lucked out at the factory. I didn't even know how I select the color of the legs. I just sort of I flicked all six switches and then hit the main switch and it printed out the legs.
I just forgot to. I just didn't read the directions right in my walkthrough.
I didn't read the directions at all. The factory, I totally lucked out. Even with the pail, it's like I walked into the factory. I saw the on the left hand side. I saw the stairs and how big the factory was, and I backed out. I said, "Let me come back to this." Then I went to the next walkway and with the pail and the switch. And I'm like, oh, let me just throw the switch, see what happens. And it picks up the pail and takes it into the factory. And I'm like, I hope that was all right. Yeah. It's like, I hope I didn't screw anything up.
Completely blew up the factory. Whoops.
Yeah. What the heck was the pail in the first place?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I think it was
like wood?
Material. It was material for the assembly line or something.
Or some oil or something.
Yeah, to fuel the plant or something.
I will say, I did appreciate just how, like, environmental things, like, once you activate it, it's like they would, like the when you activated the water wheel, like,
oh, it's still turning when you leave.
That it still turned, like in all the other scenes where you could see it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I did appreciate that, other than the fact that that thing was super loud. Like, anytime you were in a screen next to it, it's like,
the fact that there's only two sliders, music, and then all the game sound, it's like,
mm-hmm.
Can I at least turn down the sound effects?
And the music, it's like one of the, like, the main thing, it always, like, it had that weird ominous, like, and then da, 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 and it was like, oh, like, it would, like, I would, I'm trained to think something bad's gonna happen, even though I'm like, it takes me 10 minutes to walk up a flight of stairs. Nothing's gonna jump out at me in this game.
Yeah.
Where is everyone?
Yeah, the town's
at the funeral. I don't know.
What do you mean? Everyone's at the funeral. The only ones in the procession were robots.
Who knows?
Where did those robots go?
Everyone's,
or should I say automatons? Because robots is a fact.
I guess everyone's inside their houses because nothing's open.
They're all hiding.
Yeah.
It's like, that was the other thing. The light switch with the mammoth drawing. It's like, that was a good 5 minutes of like, what am I supposed to do?
I wouldn't have found it without the walkthrough. I completely, like, I was, because I would try to do things without the walkthrough, and I would just kind of like, so the upstairs.
I don't have time for this.
That attic, nope. That attic seemed pretty like self-explanatory, and I found that room, and I was like, okay, there's really nothing in here. Like, I just thought maybe something would pop up later, like that he would, that Momo would go in there and give me something, or, and so I just walked out, and I think I was on the other side of town when I was like, I don't know what to do from here. And it was like, oh, you have to, you know, see the drawing and then talk to Momo, and then you have, or, no, did I see the drawing?
You have to trace it.
I might have saw the drawing. I think it was the tracing that I didn't think to do. Like, he was like, I want a picture. Momo wants a picture of a mammoth. And I'm like, sorry, kid, I don't have it. Like,
right.
Sorry for your luck. But then I was at a loss of what to do. And it was like, oh, you're supposed to trace the picture of the mammoth on the wall. Oh, okay. I didn't know.
That was, yeah.
Yeah, so.
That was a toughie.
So how do you, so I think someone mentioned the story earlier, but how are you guys feeling about, I mean, it's kind of a slow burn a little bit here in this first part, as far as the story goes. Yeah, Jonathan.
Like I said, when you find the diary, Anna's diary in the attic, that which basically gives you all the backstory.
Yeah.
Of stuff between, her brother and who you have to find and everything. And it's like, I found that very interesting. And then they kind of, if you like didn't read through it all, it's like in the later cutscene, it's like they kind of, you know, kind of go over the main bits for you. But I enjoyed just like reading it, which made me realize like, oh, this is a, like, I'd rather just be reading a book. It's like, you know, with some pictures, maybe.
Yeah.
But, and then, like I said, I like the whole, like, premise that, you know, you're playing a lawyer who's, like, trying to buy this company, and then, like, oh, there's a secret heir, you know? And it's like, oh, it's like, it's all fascinating, like, on paper, you know, like, in the diary, in the setup, and then... And then it's like the way it's executed between the gameplay and all the other characters other than Kate are just like, ugh.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because I was just reading if everything you can read on Wikipedia is true. But it was saying that like that Sakal, or the director of the game, said that they originally wanted to make it just one game, but that there was just too much content, and they made it into three. And I'm thinking, and I've played the second part, I'm thinking you could have probably made it one game.
Apparently, the
there's a Siberia 2.
There's three.
The third one doesn't have very high ratings because it's just as obtuse apparently as these, like at least in the amount of steps that you have to take to solve puzzles.
So Chris, you played the first one when it came out. Did you play two and three when they came out too?
I played the second one when it came out.
Okay.
I haven't played the third one yet.
Okay.
Third one came out like a few years
last
ago.
It was pretty because
it was like it yeah, the second one came out, I want to say
it was like right it said 2004, I think. Yeah, right,
it was like a few years after.
Yeah.
And then it was like it 3 felt like it was never going to happen. I will say, from, you know, remembering of how, you know, I felt with playing the story or playing the game, it does get a lot better and deeper. Because I remember just really getting pulled into the story, mm-hmm. A lot more as I progressed. The first part, really, not a lot happens, but as you go in more and you meet some more people, and the story gets a lot more involved. And yeah, I mean, I don't really want to
say right.
more, but yeah, I really did enjoy the games when I played them.
Okay.
So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I said, like, I just keep trying to think about me whenever, you know, I mean, like, the hard truth is that games like this, just, if there weren't walkthroughs, I would be extremely frustrated just because I don't have the patience for them anymore. So I try to compare myself back when I did have patience for things like old Final Fantasy games that had turn-based combat and and point-and-click adventure games. And, you know, I probably would have liked it a lot better than how I felt about it while playing it this time in 2019. I was about ready to say 2017. So. Apparently, I'm 2 years behind.
One thing that because Longest Journey came out like 2-3 years before this.
Yes.
Like
yeah.
Right. One thing I did enjoy a lot more about that game that I had tried to do a few times in this, but space doesn't do that, was you could use space bar to like completely skip through like animations and dialogue stuff.
Yeah,
if you ended up, I forget, up in the
there is a button to skip through the dialogue. I can't remember what button is.
You can, you can click, but the problem with that I found was that if you like, say you were talking to someone, it would completely take you out of the conversation. Like, if you would like, if how can I explain this? If you didn't like. Let that last dialogue screen just go, it would like end the conversation and the conversation would stop. So you'd have to like, if you still had stuff you need to ask that person, like on your list of topics that you had to like talk to them again. And then you'd have to go through the opening again. But yeah, if you didn't give that last kind of like dialogue box breathing room on a certain topic, it would just be like, okay, you're done with the conversation. That's fine.
Yeah. That's one thing I wish that either you would go, you know, every time you started a conversation, you know, it should, you know, if you've already talked about something and there's no new conversation about it, take it off the list. You know, it's like, I found myself like, because it was like, there was like 6 things on the list and like 3 of them would have new content, but you didn't know which 3. So you had to go through all. to find out which ones you really needed to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Okay, well, is there anything else you guys want to talk about for the first part of Siberia? Yes, Jonathan.
The only reason I am like continuing and like giving this game a chance,
yes,
is because of the high percentage of mammoths, which are basically just elephants. And that makes me happy.
That's true.
Okay.
That's true. I mean, I guess one thing that's keeping me going with the game is I love automatons and or cyborgs or anything with any of that. So I'm just like, this is really interesting. Is
there going to be automaton mammoths?
Maybe.
That would be really
Did you like amazing. Automatons before D&D?
Yeah, I did. I've always liked robots and cyborgs and stuff. So yeah.
Okay. Quick question. Did you have to, I mean, the walkthrough I had said before you know, start the train or go back to Oscar to say to go, you had to put the mementos on their places in the train.
Yes.
Did you have to do that, or does he tell you that you have to do that?
Yeah, you have to.
Because he said the train can't go unless there are specific things in the cargo hold.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Because like I was ready to go. Like I said, like I was trying to not use whenever I could. So like I was like, okay, like we're at this point. Like let's get this train going. And he's like, hey, Kate Walker, we cannot leave yet. And because certain things need to be placed on their certain pedestals.
Oh boy. I would have.
So I'm like, okay, walkthrough time. Let's open this baby back up.
Thank you for saving me my blood pressure walkthrough.
Yes, correct.
That would have been another one. Yeah. Interesting. Thank you.
Where the heck is train station?
What?
It's one of those four paths.
It's the, it's top 2 o'clock.
Kevin, are
no,
you?
No, I know where right the train now? Station is. I just don't know where Oscar is. I have to talk to him first. So that you can in yell at me to get a ticket.
He's in the train. Yeah, you have to go in the train. Yeah.
He's in the train, then he's out of the train. You have to get a ticket from him.
Then he works the ticket office. Agent. Another guy. Oh. That's number four. The guy who's sweeping the floor at the train station.
Yep. Nothing to do with anything.
Do you just had spare animation cells you wanted to use? Or
can you talk to him?
No.
No, you can't even talk to him. He's just there sweeping.
And whistling, too.
Whistling and sweeping for infinity.
Yeah, he seems like the whistling made me suspect that I was going to have to like interact with him.
Yeah, no, same here.
No, there was no interaction. just left. Unless we're coming back to talk about all these people at the very end of the game, which would be infuriating. Yeah. Anything else? All right. Well, next week we are covering part two of Siberia. The stopping point for next week is, as you know, we ended this part. We ended part one with the train suddenly stopping outside of the university. And so that's where you'll spend the entirety of part two. And so once the, let's see, what do I have down here? So like the train, you'll go through all these, you'll do your thing in part two. And then like, you'll get to the point where it's like, okay, we're ready to like, to get off, to take the train and leave this university place. And you get your ticket from Oscar, the ticket agent. And so you, travel outside and, you travel outside the university shop. And you enter into a place that has like this big automaton gate. It's a huge automaton that you like, that's kind of a gate that you drive under the train. The train drives under it. So, yeah, you'll know it when you see it. It's your next stopping point on the train. We'll just put it that way. Just save it and end. And there you go. That's part two. So part two next week. And then the week following, we'll finish up the game. And then don't forget, on May the 7th is our month chat, which is Okami HD. And then we also have a Dragon Age 2 chat coming up in July. It's a long ways away, but it's something that if you're wanting to participate, you might want to start on. Anyways. Okay. All right, guys. Well, again, thank you for chatting with me about the first part of Siberia. For this listening, you can catch our stuff at Stitcher, iTunes, as well as Google Play. We also have our website, thegamechat.net, and we're also on Twitter at the_game_chat, and also on Facebook and Discord. Just search for us. We're there. Well, if you go to the website, I think it has links to everything for the most part. So, yes. So until next week, I'll chat at you later, guys. Bye.
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 Bye.